There's a snap. There's a kick. It is up. It is no good. No one missed.
I think we got a heck of a shot of winning. We beat anybody in the world, and I think we're going to win next Sunday.
Eli Manning stays on his feet, airs it out down the field. It is caught by Tyree.
For all you non-believers, disrespect us, talk crap about the defense like we ain't the third best defense in the league.
See you in Pittsburgh.
Can't wait.
Fitzpatrick. End zone. Eric Decker holds it in. The Jets win in overtime.
And the New York Giants, given last rites by many in December, are the Super Bowl champs in February.
This is NFL Friday, going long on all news, reaction, and game picks for the Giants, Jets, and across the NFL on WFUV Sports.
Welcome into NFL Friday. How's it going, everybody? Will Talent with you alongside me. This week is Bradley Byrne and Daniel Melia. We're more than a quarter of the way through this 2024 NFL season. I can't believe it. Really just kind of flies by. But in terms of the locals, the Giants played a really great game on the West Coast against the Seattle Seahawks. The Jets, they have a new head coach now. Very, very Jet-esque. Lots going on around the NFL. The Vikings and the Chiefs, the two only undefeated teams. Not to say that it's expected of the Chiefs, the back-to-back Super Bowl champions, but definitely very unexpected for the Vikings. Drake May, third overall pick in the 2024 NFL draft. Daniel Melia's guy. He gets his first career start this week. And Derek Carr, a great start with the Saints, out with an oblique injury. That should shake things up in the NFC South. And then at the conclusion of our show, we'll give you our picks for the Week 6 slate. Before we get into anything else, Bradley and Daniel, how are you guys doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. Classes were relatively well. And I just want to say that this is my first time hosting on NFL Friday, so it's an honor to be here.
Welcome.
I've been on NFL Friday twice, and both of them were actually with Will. My first shadow was on NFL Friday with Will.
Was it really?
And my first radio, yep.
Wow.
We're both with you on NFL Friday, so it's all come full circle.
Well, it's my first time on NFL Friday as well, so two firsts in the room. Very excited to be here. Lots to talk about. Boy, I mean, you know, we already had plenty of content coming in, and then the Jets fired Robert Saleh, and now we have a lot of content, so very excited for what we're going to be putting together today.
Action-packed week, action-packed episode for this NFL Friday. Let's jump right into it, and let's talk about Big Blue. The Giants, they go to 2-3, a West Coast trip out to Seattle. Not an easy task whatsoever. And Seattle, starting out 3-0, they've lost two straight now. Definitely a big win for the New York Giants, a good football team that they played. And the Giants, they held on all the way until the very end, and in very much Giant fashion, they made it a little bit interesting at the end there. However, they do come away with the W. Isaiah Simmons, the special teams, the NFC special teams player of the week. An excellent, excellent play to end that game, a blocked field goal. He hops the line, and the Giants return it for a touchdown to solidify the W. But overall, good vibes for the Giants. Let's start with the offense. Daniel Jones, 23 of 34, 257 passing yards, two passing touchdowns, and the biggest thing here, zero interceptions. He's got over 950 yards in his last 5 weeks, actually, that is. And another big thing with the offense, Daniel Jones, he sacked three times, but that number hasn't reached over five since week one. The Giants' offensive line is really gelling, and things, even without Malik Nabers, Bradley, things looking pretty solid for the New York football Giants through 5 weeks.
It's been really surprising. I didn't think we'd be talking about the Giants actually winning for once. This is kind of like once-in-a-lifetime thing. I wasn't, you know, obviously, when the Giants played the Seahawks last year, it was actually on my birthday, so I'm sitting there watching the game and just watching Devin Witherspoon just tear up the Giants.
A terrible game.
Terrible. But seeing that the Giants finally got their revenge, and without Malik Nabers, by the way, and without Devin Singletary, two key pieces of this offense, so the Giants being able to get this win in Seattle was crucial. And Darius Slate, I'm so glad he's finally stepped up. He's kind of been a little quiet since Neighbors got there. Obviously, you want to utilize Neighbors as much as you possibly can, but finally seeing that Darius Slayton has come to life a little bit was a little exciting to see as well.
Yeah, 8 receptions for 122 yards, 1 touchdown. The receiving core, Daniel, was pretty solid for the Giants. Obviously, Darius Slayton taking over a majority of those snaps there. But this receiving core has been holding their own with Malik Neighbors, obviously. But last Sunday was definitely a testament to how much Daniel Jones has been able to do with his receiving core this year.
He has, and I think that has a lot to do with kind of something that Bradley touched on, which is the offensive line. Believe me, as a Patriots fan, I know how important the offensive line is to getting your receivers going. Because when you are protecting the quarterback well, you give him a couple seconds to get through his progressions, make good reads, not just the first read. It gives you the opportunity to get separation. You can get the ball downfield. We saw that on that 30-yard touchdown he had to Slayton. We saw it all game with Slayton, really. Eight receptions, like you said, 122 yards. Those are not numbers to spit at all. And I think also the importance of the offensive line was showcased in the performance of Tyrone Tracy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he went out there and tore up a pretty solid defensive front for Seattle. 7.2 yards per carry. As a backup, that is crazy. And I think that it's complimentary football is what it is, able to open up the passing lanes by running the ball down their throats so effectively. So, really great game in all facets from New York. I did not see it coming at all. Matter of fact, in one of my pick'em pools, we have a lock feature where you can lock a team. Depending on the spread, you get points for how much that they are going to win, right? So, I had Seattle as my lock for the week. I really thought they were going to beat the Giants in.
Well, that's a fair lock.
They made a fool of me, and you know what? It's not the first time New York has done that.
That's definitely a fair lock indeed. I had the Giants in the beginning, and then I switched it early Sunday morning, and I was just like, I want to have faith in my team. They're not incompetent. They've been a solid football team. That game against Dallas was well within reach. That's for a whole other conversation.
And
as
I had
to
a
why
pick
they,
for that game. For
the Giants? You picked
I
the Giants?
Did.
Yep.
I picked the Giants.
That's a fair pick. That is definitely a fair pick with how battered and bruised that Dallas defense is. Dak not looking as sharp as he usually does. The Giants were in it all the way until the end. Definitely a game they could have won. They could have won that Commanders game. Could be looking. It's the same conversation every year. They could be looking at a 4-1 record, but they're not. They're looking at a very solid 2-3 record, though. They have a big game this weekend against the Cincinnati Bengals, primetime slot, Sunday Night Football. But let's talk about the Seattle game for just a little bit longer here. As you were mentioning, Daniel, with that rush game and Tyrone Tracy, third-round pick out of Purdue, a converted wide receiver turned running back now. He was excellent. 18 carries, 129 yards. That's exactly what you wanted to see, especially after drafting a running back in the absence of Saquon Barkley. Devin Singletary, he's been solid. He's been very solid. I'm not going to say elite. I'm not going to say great, but he's definitely been solid. He's done a job. Obviously missed last week, and Tracy took over the majority of the carries, and he was excellent. He was excellent. I can definitely expect him getting some more run. Could end up turning into the starting running back for the Giants at season's end. I don't know, but I was very impressed with Tyrone Tracy, and that has to do with a lot of credit to that offensive line creating those gaps for Tracy to have explosive runs. His long was only, and this is a good run, but this just shows how well he was able to pound the rock this weekend. His long was only 27 yards. We're not looking at an 129-yard game with an 80-yard run. He was consistent all throughout the game, and I give a lot of credit to the offensive line, Bradley.
No, absolutely, especially like last year, this offensive line was arguably one of the worst in football, and now just seeing that, I feel like this offseason they actually took the time to get healthy, and now that seeing 130 rushing yards from the backup running back, especially against a Seattle defense that actually is pretty decent with stopping the run, Tyrone Tracy outran the entire Seahawks running backs. He outran Zach Charbonnet and Kenneth Walker. So just seeing him outman both of them, two very good running backs, by the way, but I see a lot of growth in Tracy. I definitely think by the end of the season, if Devin Singletary, obviously he's a little older now, but I think Tracy has a very strong chance at being the starting running back by the end of the season.
Charbonnet and Walker, definitely one of the more formidable running back duos in the NFL, and both individually just as good in their own regard. And Daniel Jones also, 11 rushes for 38 yards on his own. He had a great game. He's looking a little bit better with each game, especially without Malik Nabers this week, and they were able to get a win. We'll talk about Jones in just a second. I want to shift gears now to the defensive side for the Giants. You know, not a top 10 defense right now, that is. I think this defense definitely has the potential to be something really good. But a top 15 defense going into week 6, that's nothing to sneeze at. And Daniel, 22 sacks leading the NFL. That front four for the Giants, what they invested in this offseason, has really paid off so far.
It has. And I think that we saw that against the Seahawks in particular. Geno Smith came into this game leading the NFL in pass yards, sacked 7 times. He did not look comfortable all game. And I think that was really one of the big features of why the Seahawks were not able to come away with the win. Especially, I tuned in for the end of the game, had been watching, of course, my Patriots losing again.
I picked them to win, too.
And so did I. But putting that aside, and that wasn't a homer pick either. They could have won that game.
They should have won that game.
I think, not to go on too much of a tangent here, but I think that rule that ruled out the Jalen Polk touchdown is just not a good move. I think that was so arbitrary. But, you know, it shouldn't come down to one play anyway. But back to the Giants here. I did think, in watching that last drive, wow, Geno Smith does not have a lot of time. You know, he was getting pushed backwards. Offensive line was struggling against the Giants front four. And that really was the first time all season, because I've watched the Giants' other games, that was really the first time all season I felt like they were seriously applying pressure to a quarterback in the way that they did. They did get to Deshaun Watson a good amount in that Browns game, but I think that has more to do with the Browns than it did with the Giants. This was the first time I felt like the Giants really had a collective, cohesive front four attack that was just guys working together, playing complementary football on that line, and it showed in the box score.
And of those 7 sacks, Dexter Lawrence with 3, he's already up to 6, well on his way, hopefully, fingers crossed, to a career year in what's been a great tenure with the New York Giants, an excellent pick in that draft class. He came in with Daniel Jones, and he's been nothing but spectacular for the New York Giants. 3 sacks, as I said, he had an excellent game. But one thing that I've really looked at more, Bradley, they bring in Shane Bowen. He's more of a zone coverage, secondary kind of guy. You lose Wink Martindale as your defensive coordinator, who was blitz, blitz, blitz. And then they go into this offseason, and they technically target that blitz, blitz, blitz mentality, but bring in a defensive coordinator who doesn't really do that. Now, over the last 3 weeks, the Giants have been a lot more blitz-driven, yet they still have trust in that secondary. Jason Pinnock, Tyler Newbin, Deontay Banks. Sure, Deontay Banks, you know, I don't think he's been bad by any stretch whatsoever. I think he can definitely take a step forward in terms of a sophomore season. He was excellent in his first freshman rookie campaign. But overall, a top 15 secondary, that's very solid for the lack of experience that this secondary has. And, you know, it's nothing to sneeze at, Bradley. This secondary has definitely held their own.
But no, I definitely think with getting rid of Wink Martindale, bringing in someone who's not blitz heavy, like the Giants last season defensively, they were one of the worst defenses in the league because they focused so heavily on the blitz. Teams were able to get the ball down the field relatively quickly because they sent the house on nearly every play. I feel like I'm not necessarily a blitz type of guy. I'm more of like, play the zone. You got to stop the pass so then you can get the ball back. So I definitely think that this Giants defense, now that they're focusing more on the zone, have been a whole lot better and could stop defenses and force more 3-and-outs.
Now, looking ahead to the Sunday night football slate against the Cincinnati Bengals, some non-participators in practice and one specifically on this defense that's going to hurt a little bit, Kayvon Thibodeau, he had wrist surgery. This just came out of nowhere. Came straight out of left field. Jordan Ronan, he reported today that Thibodeau had wrist surgery. And Brian Daboll noted him as week to week. That's a big loss. And wrist surgery, especially when you're trying to do these swim moves and using your hands a lot to get around defenders. I know Kayvon hasn't been spectacular in the win rate column. However, definitely a formidable force on this front four. He had a half sack against the Seahawks. not great. They're going to probably lose him. I'm going to say more than just this week. You're probably going to lose him for the next two.
They might put him on the IR, to be honest, especially like having wrist surgery. Like, that's not something you recover from quickly. So I wouldn't really be surprised if you see a tweet from Ian Rappaport or Adam Schefter saying that he's going on the IR, expected to miss a few weeks.
I think that is a particularly acute loss as we look ahead to this game against the Bengals because, I mean, the Bengals are 1-4, but boy, do they have a high-flying offense. When I watched that game against the Ravens, particularly the overtime period, you know, they were moving the football against what really is one of the better defenses in the NFL, in my opinion. And Joe Burrow was slinging it. You know, he had 5 touchdowns, somewhere in the neighborhood of 400 yards, if I remember correctly. He was the gunslinger supreme for Cincinnati. Their offense is humming. And we got to be realistic. Daniel Jones looked better. Obviously, we talked about the effectiveness of the offense, but the Giants are not winning a shootout against the Bengals. So if they want to win that game, in my opinion, really need another great performance out of the front four and out of the secondary, and that's going to be tougher without Kayvon Thibodeau.
And this offense is definitely not something that coming in from the offseason was you looked at it and said, oh, yeah, they're going to win games like that. They're definitely more defensive reliant. They may get Drew Phillips back, cornerback, that they also drafted at Kentucky this past NFL draft. He had a calf shoulder issue. He was limited in practice so far this week. So those are good signs pointing up. He missed last week. He's been kind of battered and bruised. Had an excellent forced fumble in his first NFL play against the Minnesota Vikings in week 1. Definitely would be nice to have him back and lock down that secondary. You might get Malik Nabers back, who is he didn't participate, but he's trending upward and he's considered day-to-day now after suffering a concussion against the Cowboys. That would be huge. Devin Singletary kind of got banged up with a groin injury. Also limited, so another trend in the upwards direction. Things are looking up for the Giants. One person I want to point out in particular before we talk about these New York Jets and the carousel that continues for the New York Jets, that is, let's talk about Daniel Jones for just a brief moment here. I want to pose the question. I want to throw it out there right now, and I won't even give a take. What is Daniel Jones' job security through 5 weeks?
So through my take on it, I think unless Daniel Jones gets a season-ending injury, I think he will finish out the rest of the season. But whether he's a starter next year, that is a huge, huge what-if, because if the Giants get a high draft pick this year, they're probably going to go out and target Quinn Ewers or Carson Beck. So I think Daniel Jones' job security, as of right now, he'll finish out the season, but it's a huge, huge question going into the next season. Like, if you're Brian Daboll and you're preparing for the draft, like, you can't stick with Daniel Jones again. I really think that it's time to move on from Daniel Jones' era and to draft a quarterback.
Well, we've all watched plenty of Daniel Jones football at this point. I think that pretty much everybody who tunes into Giants football games can tell you that the best version of Daniel Jones is a fine, solid quarterback, and the worst version of Daniel Jones we shall not speak of. So to that end, we have to keep in mind his past track record while also assessing his performance so far this year. He has definitely looked better. Really can say, as a neutral observer, this has been a reprisal of some of the best football of his career, kind of like that 22 season where he was actually a very solid quarterback and could win you games, not just be a component to winning. But 2-3 is not exactly, you know, a light-the-world-on-fire start. And this is a serious stretch of games they got in these next 4 games. There are no, you know, easy games on the schedule through the beginning of November. You got the Bengals on Sunday Night Football, and you have Eagles next week in the divisional matinee. And you got a road trip to Pittsburgh, primetime game. That's going to be tough. And the red-hot Commanders. I mean, they already beat the Giants this year before Jaden Daniels started looking like the second coming, and now he is looking like the second coming, and they're going to have to play him, obviously, in the Meadowlands, but still, that's going to be a tough game. So 4 big-time prove-it games here. The Giants signed him to this big extension. Obviously, he has played well enough to keep the job, I think Bradley's right, through the end of the year. But I would say these next 4 games in particular are going to say a lot about whether he is the starting quarterback of the Giants of the future. I think he will not be, after this year or in the near future. I just don't think he has high enough of a ceiling for where this Giants team wants to go.
I think it's all going to depend what happens after the bye week personally. And if I remember correctly, I don't have it in front of me, but that is after the Germany game against the Panthers.
That's right. That's right.
And it's week 9, I believe. They have the bye. Is that the right?
That's week 10.
Week 10. Okay. So they'll have a bye week on week 10. And I think what happens after the bye is going to be crucial. This could end up being a 7-9 team. They very well might win 2 or 3 more games. That's just kind of where we're at with Daniel Jones and the Giants. Who knows? You don't know what you're going to get with the Giants. As of right now, through 5 weeks, they've looked very solid. I'm kind of indifferent on his job security. I really would like them to find someone who's going to be just a rock under center. That you need someone who can win you ball games. And where I'm at on terms of he won't be, games like that Dallas game, that was a winnable game. He is not the kind of quarterback right now that is. I can't even say that he will be. But he's not the kind of quarterback that wins that game.
And he missed some throws down the stretch.
He did.
Particularly in that last drive, he missed some throws.
Mm-hmm. A lot of deep shots in that game that were underthrown. Not many that were overthrown, but just not where you needed them to be. And we're talking like there was a pass. There were two passes to Darius Slayton that could have gone straight to the house. Slayton had whoever was matched up against him beat twice. He had a couple drops from Wandale, which didn't really help, especially in that fourth quarter. But that's a kind of game that Daniel Jones just doesn't win. And you need a quarterback that wins those kinds of games, especially not only is it your division rival, but it's a team that's going to compete for a playoff spot down the stretch. So I'm indifferent. I'm indifferent on where he's at right now. He's definitely looked sharp. He's definitely looked solid. But there's a lot of football left. And we'll go back to week 6 against the Cincinnati Bengals. That's a great test for Daniel Jones. We'll see how he matches up in a primetime slot against a primetime quarterback and primetime offensive core with Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins slotted up 1 and 2 for Joe Burrow to throw. But let's move on. Let's talk about these New York Jets now right away off the bat. Let's rip the Band-Aid off. Robert Saleh, he is canned. See you later. Robert Saleh fired as the head coach of the New York Jets. I don't really know, first reactions, I don't really know if it was warranted, personally. I don't really feel as though it was the appropriate time to give the hook to Saleh. I think they could have just given him the year and made this an off-season change. But they go straight at it, and they say, yep, Saleh's gone. There's been a whole bunch of controversy and drama surrounding this situation. Does Aaron Rodgers have anything to do with it? He was going to demote Nathaniel Hackett from the play calling duties. There's just so much going on. But now, Daniel, we're looking at a dumpster fire that is the New York Jets. Supposed to be a 10-win team this year. Could have been an 11-win team this year. And they lose to Sam Darnold in London. The first loss that Robert Saleh got was against Sam Darnold when they played the Panthers. And that's just very poetic and fitting. But Saleh canned, initial reactions.
Obviously, it's hard for me to give a straight, level-headed take on this because I must admit that it is pleasing to me that no matter how bad my Patriots screw things up, Jets always find a way to steal a show from us. But I really do feel bad for Robert Saleh in this case. And I would agree with you that at least so far this season doesn't seem warranted. In a vacuum, 20-36 record through 56 games as a head coach. Obviously, one of the worst, not just in Jets history, but in NFL history for that period of time. So, if you're just looking at the win-loss column, really is definitely an underperformance. And I can understand where the motivation comes from, especially for the Jets, with such high expectations coming into this season. But we're 5 games in. Obviously, they haven't looked like world beaters. But I really thought, especially after I watched them torch my Patriots, that the offense was making strides, the defense looked fantastic in that game, and then they wiped it off the board against the Broncos. However, they were fairly close to winning that game against the Vikings, and it was not Robert Saleh's fault, I think, that they lost that one. Aaron Rodgers' 3 interceptions really dragged them down, and that was what ended up costing them the game. So, again, not looking like world beaters this early into the season, but I don't think that that has been on Robert Saleh. And I think that he has just wound up being a convenient scapegoat in this case. And I just don't know what the game plan is going forward from here. You're firing him right before you play a big-time, prime-time Monday night football game against really your biggest division rival, because let's be real, Miami and New England, not threats to win the division this year. So you're firing him right before the biggest game of your early season. I don't see why you wouldn't at least give him a shot. Do you really think that the interim, I don't even remember, I think his name is Jeff something.
Jeff Ulbrich.
That's right. Jeff Ulbrich. Do you really think he's going to give you the best chance to win this football game right now? I don't understand the decision from management. I would have given Saleh at least a bit more time with Rodgers at the controls, because look at the quarterbacks he has had to play with through his Jets tenure. The best one besides Rodgers is probably Joe Flacco.
In my opinion, I agree with you. They should have waited till the end of the season to fire him, because now you don't have a head coach going into arguably your most important game of the year. So now you're all dismantled and discombobulated. And Robert Saleh is a defensive coach. He's like Tom Thibodeau. Defense wins championships. Saleh has focused, obviously, you can blame him for the offense, but this defense has been arguably the best defense in football. They have exceeded expectations, and they're doing this without Hassan Reddick still. So I just feel like you can't put all of the blame on Robert Saleh, because Nathaniel Hackett, who had arguably one of the worst coaching seasons in the history of football, and I read this article on ESPN that they only brought him in just to appeal to Aaron Rodgers. I would not have chosen Nathaniel Hackett to run not just a football team, but any offense or defense. But in my opinion, I feel like Saleh just shouldn't have been fired. Like, when you're thinking about it, Saleh was going to fire Nathaniel Hackett. He planned on it. Like, Saleh probably didn't even know he was getting fired. Like, why would he just tell Hackett, I'm going to fire you just because I know I'm going to get fired? I do not like this decision whatsoever. And I think Nathaniel Hackett, I'm surprised he still has a job, to be honest. Especially, I'm surprised any team would want him after the atrociousness that was that Denver team last year.
And they lose to that Denver team just a week ago, 10-9.
Again, with the poetic justice.
Just crazy. And then Sam Darnold obviously getting the win for the Minnesota Vikings, a 23-17 win, that is, in London over the Jets. But I do want to mention about the Saleh quarterback contingency here. The move in the beginning didn't make a lot of sense. He's a defensive-minded coach. He was the defensive coordinator for an incredible defense in the San Francisco 49ers. And to his credit, has made the New York Jets defense one of the best in the NFL over the last couple of years. Now, they've struggled with some penalties and yardage lost on those penalties. But Saleh came in and did great things for the defense. So, you know, I can't really fault him all that much. You come in and you draft Zach Wilson as his first draft pick. Obviously, he doesn't really have so much of a say there. They had let Darnold go. They needed a quarterback. They're, you know, they were going to work on the defense, and Saleh did that. But now you have to use a defensive-minded head coach to, in his first tenure, too, as being a head coach, you have to then use him to develop a quarterback, a second overall pick. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. It's very much head-scratching. And I give Dan Quinn a little bit of slack here, because he's a defensive-minded head coach. Jaden Daniels is incredible, and he's in his first year. This is also not Dan Quinn's first rodeo as being a head coach whatsoever. So it's a little bit of a different story, but a first-year head coach in Robert Saleh is now tasked to make Zach Wilson the franchise quarterback of the future. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And now you fire him, you bring in Aaron Rodgers, and you fire Saleh, and now you're staring at a barrel now. You're looking for answers. Is Jeff Ulbrich going to be the option here? I don't know. He's the DC. You just went back to a defensive coordinator being your head coach when offense is the main issue. Gave up 23 points against a high-flying Minnesota Vikings offense this whole year. That's really not that bad. You scored 9 points against the Denver Broncos with a rookie quarterback. You know, I don't know. I really didn't like the move for the Jets. If you were going to do it, you should have let the season ride out, because you don't know what you're going to get out of Aaron Rodgers for the rest of the season. You don't know if he's coming back. He could end up retiring. And that's where I want to shift our focus to this Jets conversation. Is Aaron Rodgers hurting the Jets? Like, legitimately, is he hurting the Jets? He's 2-3, 61% completion percentage, 1,000 yards, just a little bit shy of 1,100. 7 touchdowns to 4 interceptions. He did not look good against the Vikings whatsoever. He looked better in the second half, but I mean, we're talking like negative fantasy points for the first 3 quarters of that game. That's crazy. Is he hurting the Jets? Because Bradley, his mobility in the pocket is just awful. It's just, it's not feasible.
Here's my take when the whole Aaron Rodgers thing first happened. In my opinion, you shouldn't be relying on a 40-year-old quarterback who every single offseason says, oh, I'm going to retire. I don't know what I'm doing. I just think it's kind of like the same thing with the Lakers a few years ago. They relied on a bunch of old geezers to try and win a bunch of games. It never works. I don't even understand why the Jets traded for Aaron Rodgers in the first place. I knew it was going to be a failure. They're not going to get... They did all of that just to get, at most, maybe 2 or 3 seasons. Because I think Aaron Rodgers is going to be gone. At most, he'll play one more season with a new head coach. And if that doesn't go well...
And a new team? Or will he stick with the Jets?
That's tough because, obviously, we have this whole Davante Adams thing. And obviously, if Davante Adams goes to the Jets, Aaron Rodgers would do anything to stay with Davante Adams. So, in my opinion, I just don't understand why you would trade for a 40-year-old quarterback. I personally wouldn't have done that. I would have got rid of Zach Wilson and went into the draft, into last year's draft even, and trade up for a quarterback. The Jets could have easily have traded up and maybe gotten a Drake May or a Jaden Daniels. Obviously, Caleb was off the table regardless, but I just don't think you should be relying on a 40-year-old quarterback to carry you to the Super Bowl, let alone a winning record of the playoffs.
I mean, hey, maybe they could have gotten Justin Fields, right? He's 3-2 in Pittsburgh.
He should have stayed in Chicago, in my opinion.
Yeah, the Bears should not have let Justin Fields go. That was I was feeling that way before they got Caleb. Like, when it was in the cards that was going to happen, I felt that Justin Fields should have been the
quarterback. Imagine if Justin Fields had Marvin Harrison Jr. to throw to.
Oh, dude. Rome has been
good. Oh, yeah, he's been great.
But, oh, man, dude.
No, I know. Woo. That would give the NFC North folks some nightmares, I'm sure. But to address the question at hand here, it's tough because on his best days, especially against the Patriots on Thursday Night Football a couple weeks back, Aaron Rodgers is still that guy. I mean, he can put a ball in a receiver's basket in a way few quarterbacks in the league can. But, you know, when you watch the film of that Vikings game, the answer is unequivocally yes. He was hurting them, especially that interception he had to Van Ginkle to start the game, and the interception that he underthrew that Stephon Gilmore grabbed, which, by the way, was a nice throwback to Super Bowl 53. Was almost the exact same play, and he underthrew, just like Jared Goff did back in Super Bowl 53, underthrew him, and Stephon Gilmore was all over it. Those were both unequivocal quarterback mistakes that Aaron Rodgers made that hurt the Jets. And I think he hurt him in that Broncos game, too. He looked mystified by that Denver secondary, and his lack of mobility in the pocket that you mentioned, Will, really dragged him down.
And that left leg, it just seems like it's really ailing.
It's not the same. I mean, credit to him for recovering as quickly as he did from an Achilles tear at 40, but, you know, we have to be realistic here. The thing is, though, even if he is hurting the Jets, like, in a net cost-benefit analysis, he's coming out on the negative. What do you do? I mean, there is, again, not a clear succession place in plan for him. I don't feel like, especially in the immediate term, that the Jets have the guys in the bullpen ready to come out there and replace him if he does turn out to still be injured or just not effective enough. And I don't know how you get out of this. So, yeah, I don't know necessarily how that cost-benefit analysis works out, but it also feels like a kind of moot point because they have moored themselves to him for the rest of the season. If nothing else, the Saleh move makes that clear.
And another move that I want to touch on before we start talking about some of our NFL topics around the league, are the Jets in it for Davante Adams? You would think that they are, right? Because of it's the Aaron Rodgers-Davante Adams connection, but firing the head coach, things looking a little bit bleak, schedule also not looking super crazy. Let's see, they go Monday night game against the Bills. I'm counting that they're going to lose that game with how Josh Allen has looked this year. I think they're going to lose that game. We'll talk about picks in a minute, but I just spoiled one. But yeah, I think the Bills will win that game. And then they have back-to-back primetime games. They're now slotted in for Sunday Night Football against the Steelers in Pittsburgh. No matter how good or bad the Steelers are, as long as Mike Tomlin is there, that is not an easy win whatsoever.
That defense is tough, especially for an immobile quarterback.
Yeah, and then they play in New England. They beat them the first time around. So
they'll beat us again.
Then they play the Texans. Then they play the Texans. And then they play the Cardinals, and then they play the Colts, and then they have a bye week. Cardinals-Colts, toss-up. I think they'll lose to the Texans. Cardinals-Colts is a toss-up. This is not an easy stretch for the Jets whatsoever. Odd time to be firing a head coach, but I digress. Is Devontae Adams still in the running for the Jets, Bradley?
Absolutely, because Aaron Rodgers has all the power in the world. Like, he can say, I'm leaving after this offseason, and nobody would care. If Aaron Rodgers really wants Devontae Adams, he can only walk to the front office and say, trade for Devontae Adams, and they would be like, we'll see what we can do. But in my opinion, you already have Garrett Wilson. You already have Breece Hall. Why do you need another weapon for Aaron Rodgers? You already have two all-pro players. And if that's not enough for you, then I just don't really know what else to say. Obviously, they're going to be in the running, and we saw Devontae Adams put the Edgar Allan Poe Raven as his post. No receiver should go to the Ravens because you're basically just a decoration for Lamar Jackson, Derrick Henry. But I think Devontae Adams, unfortunately, will go to the Jets. The Jets are just a mess right now. I really don't know how else to put it.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I mean, there's no doubt that they are in contention, especially I think this ownership group, very aggressive. The move to fire Saleh very much clarifies that they are going to be aggressive, but don't think they should be in the running. From an objective neutral standpoint, if you do the cost-benefit analysis on this one, I feel certain that Devontae Adams is not going to fix the problems they have and is not going to push this team over the edge in terms of Super Bowl contention or anything like that. Really, how much is he, mind you, over the hill in wide receiver years? He's past 30. I mean, his best years are probably behind him. How much is he going to add to this football team? How many of their problems is he going to solve? I don't think the answer is many.
That's why I posed the, is Aaron Rodgers the problem here? Because I agree with that take, Daniel. Is Devontae Adams really going to solve all that much for the Jets? I don't know. I think the Hassan Reddick situation is a much larger problem to solve. He would have been such a incredible piece to have on this defense, a situation that's still not resolved with the Jets. Once again, just being the Jets, just kind of a dumpster fire. So we will see with them. But let's go broadly now. Let's talk about the NFL. Let's start with the Vikings, obviously, coming off a 23-17 win against those New York Jets in London, starting out 5-0. Now, in the bye week, Sam Darnold, top five MVP candidate through 5 weeks. I can't believe I'm even saying that. That's just actually insane. But I think that out of the bye week, we're going to start to see a little bit of the Vikings' true side here. They play the Lions, and they play the Rams. This team is not going 17-0. That's just not happening. I don't think they're going to win the NFC North either. But a great start. Justin Jefferson's looked great. Sam Darnold has been amazing. But overall, Bradley, your thoughts on the Minnesota Vikings 5-0 start?
First off, just saying that Sam Darnold might possibly be a top three quarterback, just still to this day, just feels weird to say. And I agree with you. I don't think the Vikings will win the NFC North. As long as the Lions are trotting out a football team every week, I just don't see the Vikings winning that division. But they have some interesting games coming. They have, obviously, the Lions. They're not going to win that game. Rams, they can win that game. They've suffered a lot of injuries, Rams. No Puka Nacua, no Cooper Kupp. So I just feel like the Vikings, they're obviously not going 17-0. That might never happen for a long time. But I feel like with this month coming up, we'll see the Vikings' true side. Like, are they legit playoff contenders, or did they just have an easy start to the season? Because obviously, they just beat the Jets last week, but then again, I feel like beating the Jets at this point, with all the problems they have, really isn't something to brag about, in my opinion.
I don't know about that Lions game take, though. You know, they're going to be coming off a bye week, and the game is in the Twin Cities. I think that that is one that, if Minnesota can win it, then not only would they really be showing that they are contenders, but they would be putting themselves in the driver's seat for the NFC North. They'll have a lot of motivation. They'll have a lot of rest. Lions are going to be coming off a trip to Dallas, Jerry's World. So I think Minnesota could win that game. But putting that aside, we remember this team from 2022 being the one-score win merchants, and then they got exposed as soon as the playoffs started. Really the most fraudulent 13-4 team the NFL has and maybe will ever see. But in this year, three of their wins by one score. Granted, they were beating the Packers by a ton, and then the Packers kind of came back, and I don't know that they were exactly a threat to win that game, but it's a bit misleading, that scoreline. But they had to eke out two 23-17 wins over the 49ers and the Jets. And I think that Minnesota, as great as they have looked, they're not going to go 17-0, like you said. There are holes in this team. Can Sam Darnold keep this up? Can Aaron Jones continue to shred opposing defenses? I think Justin Jefferson, I'm not going to even ask if he can continue to be great because he's Justin Jefferson. Yes, he can. But I think that we've seen teams, there's historical precedent for teams that start out hot and kind of cool off as the year goes. And there is definitely reason to think that the Vikings will do that. But I do think they're a playoff team.
I don't mind that. I think they could definitely be a playoff team as well. With the Vikings, their defense, their pass defense is not spectacular, and they've played against high flying offenses such as the Eagles the 49ers and the likes of them. Who else? They played the Jets this week, played the Packers, the Texans. That's a high flying offense right there, and they held the Texans to 7 points. So they'll be fresh. Aaron Jones will be a little bit healthy. I know he was banged up a little bit this week, but I don't know. I think it'll be a tough test against the Lions. It's their second in-division game, and it was a 2-point win over the Packers in their first in-division game. It's a tough division. It's probably, you know, keep saying the AFC North. The Browns aren't really living up to it. I would say the NFC North is probably the toughest division in football right now, so we will have to wait and see. But the Vikings 5-0 going into their bye week in week 6. Let's talk about another thing. Daniel, I'm going to go right to you. Patriots. They sit Jacoby Brissett after 5 weeks, and they're going to start the number 3 overall pick in the 2024 draft, Drake May. I bet you've been highly anticipating this very week.
You bet.
100%. I will say, though, it's the right time. Is it the right time? That offensive line doesn't look like it's going to build any confidence for him. But since you're the Patriots guy here, just give me some thoughts, some overall takes on this move.
Sure thing. Is it the right time? Well, it depends on how you look at it. If we were going to start him this early in the season, I would have preferred to do it last week. Not as formidable of a front seven for Miami on the defensive side of the football. And our offensive line ended up playing the best game of the season for it. That is, last week. Vidarian Lau, highest graded PFF offensive lineman in the NFL last week, 90.8 grade, which is incredible because, let me tell you, he has never been that good. But is it the right time in terms of where the team's at? I think absolutely. To me, having read a lot of online chatter about this, and there has been a lot of hemming and hawing, will they, won't they, in the Patriots fan base up to this moment, it had to happen. It had to happen. We're 1-4. We have lost two games, I would say, the Seahawks one and this Dolphins one, where there were real opportunities for us to win it if our offense had a bit more spark to it, particularly this Dolphins game. I think that Jacoby's lack of flexibility, his low ceiling as a quarterback, kind of cost us the game. So it reads to me as a bit of a locker room move, too. You know, these guys, from a fan standpoint, all right, 1-4, you know, losing games honestly doesn't hurt us that much because we're not doing anything this year. We need more high draft picks. We need to get offensive linemen. We need to get more playmakers on offense, all sorts of stuff, right? But from a locker room perspective, guys are not going to want to lay their butts on the line every week to play for a team that has no realistic chance of winning. With Drake May, I think we at least have a chance. We can at least threaten to throw the ball downfield. We can at least have a little bit of offensive fire.
He's got a rocket too, right? If I remember correctly, he's got quite the arm.
Oh, he can throw that thing a mile. And so, and Jacoby Brissett has the least downfield throws, 20 plus yards, of any quarterback in the NFL. And the ones that he's had have been in garbage time for the most part. So I really think that this was the right time from a team perspective. Is it going to change a lot? Probably not. I think we're still going to lose a lot of games, but I'm very happy that we did it. I think that this is not the week I would have chosen. You know, Texans have two serious pass rushers on their front four, but, you know, it had to happen eventually, and I'm glad just from a fan's perspective, that I get to watch someone other than Jacoby Brissett appreciate him taking all those hits. But let's throw the ball downfield, shall we?
I kind of feel bad for Drake May. You're kind of throwing him right into the pit when they have to play arguably one of the best teams of football with the Texans. But in my opinion, I feel like they should have just started him week one. Give the young rookie a chance to grow, because then you could see by the first few weeks if he's struggling, okay, bench him, put Brissett out, let May watch a veteran do it, and let him develop, and then eventually you could throw May back in there. But I just feel like throwing him into the fire against the Texans really just isn't the best case scenario for him, especially with this Texans defense that is not the best, but they will pressure May a lot, and obviously the Patriots' offensive line has struggled all year. So I just feel like I would have started May week one, give him a chance to see the NFL for the first time, not maybe against the Texans. I'd say maybe against the Seahawks. That would have been a nice game for him to get acclimated, like, okay, we'll see how he progresses. But I just feel like he's in really in a bad situation right now. He has to play his first game against the Texans, and if he doesn't play well, he's going to get criticized a lot. But you can't really put all the blame on him because at the end of the day, it is the Texans.
I'm going to slightly disagree with you there, Bradley. I kind of like that Gerard Mayo sat him so he can learn that offense a little bit. And especially behind someone like Jacoby Brissett. Now, it's not like Aaron Rodgers, but Jacoby Brissett has played in the league for quite some time now. When you get up to the years that he has played, that's very respectable. It's a guy that's been on multiple different teams, his second stint with the Patriots. It's a good guy to learn behind for sure and get a feel for what it is to operate as the leader of an NFL offense. It's very hard to do. It could have ended up being a Bryce Young situation where you throw him right in and you don't have the pieces around, because the Patriots, you know, they're not Panthers bad, but they don't really have those pieces to support a rookie quarterback like that. They're just not there yet. So when he understands that offense, I think then you'll see more confidence in him as he goes through the remainder of the schedule. Now, I think it was all just building up that confidence. He'll use what they have and then they'll work around it. But I think letting him sit and reading that offense for a little bit is definitely a solid move.
And that is the philosophy of the Patriots coaching staff. Alex Van Pelt, a Green Bay Packers acolyte, they watched Jordan Love sit for a year behind Aaron Rodgers and become a really great quarterback. And before that, actually, deep pull here, Matt Flynn sat for a while behind Aaron Rodgers and then went off and started some football games for the Seahawks. So that is the Green Bay way. AVP came from Green Bay, went to Cleveland, had some really good success there with a limited quarterback, all due respect to Baltimore legend Joe Flacco. But that was always going to be the case. And I agree with you, Will. I'm going to have to disagree with you as well, Bradley. It was not time to do trial by fire for Drake May. They wanted to be careful that that didn't happen. They wanted to give him the Bryce Young situation. They wanted to give him some time. And I think that that was absolutely the right decision. We don't have the playmakers to give him a Jaden Daniels-type situation, but, you know, I think that there are some real reasons for hope with this offense. We have some guys. We picked up Jalen Polk over the offseason. He's been struggling, but he had a decent game, I think, this last week. Got some serious separation. Could have had that touchdown, but Jacoby overthrew him. We have Javon Baker, a real downfield threat. Supposedly, Tyquan Thornton can be a downfield threat. Haven't seen it yet, but supposedly he was a second rounder 2 years ago. And the last thing I'll note on that before we move on is the offensive line, as I said, hadn't really coagulated yet. Right now,
that's a good word.
We're missing David Andrews. He's out for the season, our starting center, and one of the last guys from our last Super Bowl team. But Nick Leverett had a tough game. Outside of him, though, the offensive line really actually held up fairly well this past week, and I think that J-Rod Mayo needed to see that for a week before he felt comfortable putting his shiny new quarterback behind that line.
Now, a little bit of breaking news. It's not super breaking. We know he got surgery, but Jordan Ronan just tweeted out that Kayvon Thibodeau, he quote tweeted Dan Duggan, who said that Kayvon Thibodeau is going to miss 4 to 6 weeks this wrist surgery. So that's a big loss for the New York Giants. Not to harp on the Giants again, we already talked about them, but that'll bring them back probably after the bye week, maybe a week after that. So looking at a week 11, a week 12 return for Kayvon Thibodeau. But the last NFL topic I want to bring up, Derek Carr having a great season, goes down with an oblique injury. That's a big muscle. He's probably going to miss some time. He's also older now. It's going to take a little bit more time to have that muscle recover and recuperate. But I just read a little bit about this injury, and I'm not so – I understand the oblique injury, but Spencer Rattler is now in strong consideration to be the starting quarterback for the Saints. And Bradley, I kind of like that. I kind of like that.
No, I kind of do, especially since, obviously, Spencer Rattler has had time to sit behind Derek Carr. And I'm starting to change my mind a little bit about the Drake May thing. I agree with you guys.
A change of heart.
I had a change of heart in the middle of the episode. But I feel like Spencer Rattler, obviously, you have Alvin Kamara and Chris Olave. So he kind of has really good weapons around him. But sitting behind Derek Carr, who's also probably a top 10 quarterback in the league, which is also very weird to say. I would never thought those words would ever come out of my mouth. But I have faith that, you know, obviously Spencer Rattler won't be like Derek Carr as good as he has been. But being able to sit behind a veteran who has done this for a while, has been on a team and has just... Sorry, I just lost my train of thought. But yeah, doing this for a while will hopefully help Spencer Rattler to play good.
I think that the Saints are kind of in a weird spot, you know? They had that start to the season, absolutely pummeled the Panthers, and then they completely destroyed the Cowboys in Jerry's world. Now everybody thinks they're a Super Bowl contender. They lose a tough one against the Eagles, lose a tough one against the Falcons, and then they really didn't look that competitive against the Chiefs for the most part. After that Derek Carr interception early in the game, it kind of felt like it was a fait accompli that they were going to lose that one. So, weird spot for the team to be in. Weird spot for Spencer Rattler to maybe be starting. But I like that kid in college. He did some really good stuff in college. He was impressive to me.
Yeah, especially after he transferred, too.
Oh, I know. Mm-hmm. He was seriously lighting the world on fire for a while after he transferred there. So I think that this is an interesting position for them to be in. I'm excited for them, honestly. It could turn out very well. And if it doesn't, well, do we think they were going to be Super Bowl contenders this year? I never quite bought that narrative.
No, and Derek Carr has played very well. He's got over 70% completion rate right now, 989 yards, eight touchdowns to four picks. I do think it could open up this NFC South just a little bit, maybe have the Falcons and Buccaneers kind of duke it out. But I'm excited for Spencer Rattler because Derek Carr, as good of a quarterback as he is, you know, he's a little bit older now. He's 33. And he probably has, I don't know off the top of my head, but 2 years left on that contract. This is the second year of Derek Carr.
I think it's like that, yeah.
It was a 4 or 5 year deal, so 2 or 3 years left on his contract. Saints, you know, depending on how Spencer Rattler plays, they could end up finding their new quarterback for however long. Not saying it's going to happen, but it's definitely a possibility. Don't know where that puts him in terms of playoff contention, but overall, it sucks that Derek Carr's hurt, but there's a lot of optimism for the Saints. You could end up finding a really good option in Spencer Rattler. You could stay competitive. I do believe, though, that it will open the door for the Falcons and the Buccaneers. But before we go, it's time to make our picks for the Week 6 slate, and we're going to start with Thursday Night Football. We're just going to go back and forth. If you got a little take about the game, please go for it. But I'm going to start right off the bat. It's the 49ers and the Seahawks. I'm going to take the 49ers.
Yeah, I'm going to agree. I'm definitely going to take the 49ers. Getting Deebo and Ayuk back, hopefully they can bounce back a little bit after, obviously, Deebo struggled last week. But now that the 49ers are slowly starting to get their pieces back, I don't see them losing this game whatsoever. And I expect it to be a blowout, to be honest.
I'm going out on a limb and taking the Hawks. I think that this is a tough place for San Francisco to play. I think that they're going to need some time to reintegrate their guys, and I think that Seattle's rushing attack is going to bounce back after a weak week against New York.
Bengals at the Giants, Sunday Night Football in the Meadowlands. Give me the Giants. Bengals have been kind of stumbling. I know that this Bengals offense is still high-flying. A 1-4 start I don't love. If the Giants defense is clicking, it could be a very much a low-scoring game. And I think the Giants are going to squeeze it out, end up going 500 through 6 weeks. They'll be at 3-3.
I'm going to agree. Actually, I'm going to take the Giants as my lock for this week.
Wow.
Especially if the Giants can do the same thing that they did last week against the Seahawks, 130 rushing yards. The Bengals are 30th in offensive rushing yards allowed. So if the Giants could do the same thing, go with the run, and just keep hammering in that Bengals defense, they can definitely squeeze out this game. And Cincinnati is only 3.5-point favorites, which I think it should be flip-flop. I think the Giants...
Wow. Okay.
This might be a little bit of Giants bias, but if the Giants can do the same thing they did last week, because we don't know if Neighbors is going to be back, so assuming he's not, because you don't want to rush him if he has an injury, it's better to let him sit an extra week. If the Giants can run the ball as well as they did last week, I really think that they can win this game.
Here I was thinking I was going to be interesting for picking the Giants. Guess I should have known better with two homers in the room. But, yes, I am taking the New York football Giants. Think they're going to run downhill, control the clock, make Joe Burrow sit on the sideline, and watch as the New York football Giants win a close one to get to 500.
Well, you know, usually I'll have a Giants homer pick. This week, actually, I didn't go Giants homer-centric. Usually there's some times where I'm like, oh, yeah, I'll just take the Giants because they're my squad. But I actually feel like they have a shot at winning this game. And, of course, I'm going to say that now, and they're going to go 2-4, and they're going to get blown out. However, I don't think that's going to be the case. It would be very Giant, though. Moving on to the next game, international. London, the second one of the season. It's the Jags and the Bears. Tough team to play internationally. That is that Jacksonville Jaguars squad. But I'm still going to go with the Bears. The Jags have been kind of fumbling the whole season. Don't really know the direction that they're headed in. What are they going to get out of T-Law? It hasn't been too much. Doug Peterson, what's his job looking like? I don't know. All I know, Bears on top in London.
Yeah, I'm going to agree. First off, I don't get why they put the worst matchups internationally, but that's just my opinion. But especially, I think the Bears are going to win because I feel like Trevor Lawrence is suffering from that QB gets massive extension over the offseason and then starts off the season disappointing. I just don't see any direction that the Jaguars are going in. They are dead last in offensive points per game allowed, dead last in offensive passing yards allowed, and they are dead last in sacks. So I'm going to go with the Bears to win this one.
Going to be close to me. Neither of these teams particularly impresses me, but I will take the Bears as well. Think that T-Law is not going to be able to handle a pretty balanced defense for the Bears.
So now I think we have to go rapid fire here. We're running out of time on our record file, but that's okay. Next game, Bucks-Saints. I'm going Bucks.
Yeah, me too. I'm just going to go Bucks. Just because Spencer Rattler's first week, you don't know what it's going to be like.
They've owned the Saints recently. Give me the Bucks.
Next, Cardinals-Packers. Could see it going the Cardinals' way. I'm going to go the Packers, though.
I want to go the Cardinals. I say Marvin Harrison Jr. has his best game.
Best game after he already got 3 touchdowns? Wow, that's going to be
that's my hot take for the week.
Heck of a game. You've already had a couple, but I will take the Packers. Every week, Jordan Love gets healthier.
Looking really solid. Colts-Titans. I'm going to go the Colts. I know the Titans are coming off a bye, but give me the Colts.
I'm going to go with the Colts. And do you think we'll see another Joe Flacco, Lynn Sanity run again?
Oh, I think we will. I'm picking the Colts as well for that reason. Riding with Joe, the Blue Hen.
Browns at the Eagles. Browns stumbling. Give me the Eagles.
Yeah, that's an easy pick, Eagles.
No doubt, Eagles.
Next, Texans, Patriots. Give me the Texans. Sorry, Daniel.
Yeah, sorry, Dan. I'm going to have to go with the Texans.
Do I have to apologize to myself as well? I'm picking the Texans. But hey, Drake May for over 250 yards.
You know what? I don't hate it. Commanders at Ravens. This is a very interesting game. Would get into it, but right off the bat, I'm just going to go with the Ravens.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Ravens, too, especially that 1-2 punch with Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry.
Battle of the Beltway, baby. This is the most fun one I've seen in years, but I'll take the Ravens in an absolute ground-pound mania.
Very, very much alike in terms of who is under center. You have a more seasoned type of Lamar Jackson that is Lamar Jackson, and then you have the rookie that kind of plays like Lamar in Jaden Daniels. But very, very exciting stuff. Can't wait for that one. Chargers at Broncos. Give me the Broncos.
I'm going to go with the Chargers. I think the Chargers go on the road and they get the job done.
Tough one because the Chargers are coming off a bye. I like what Jim Harbaugh's done so far, but the Broncos have been playing good football recently. I think their defense will win them this one.
Steelers at the Raiders. Another interesting matchup. The Raiders also just announced that Aiden O'Connell is going to start over Gardner Minshew. Antonio Pierce announced that today. Give me the Steelers.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Steelers too, and I don't really think it's close.
Same dumpster, different garbage. Same garbage, different dumpster, excuse me, for behind center for the Raiders. Give me the Steelers. They've owned the Raiders in this matchup recently.
Falcons at the Panthers. Big Kirk, what a ball game. Give me the Falcons.
I'm going to pick the Falcons, too. I feel like Kirk Cousins got that same thing Joe Flacco had last year, that insanity run.
Watch out, Dave Canales. Kirko change is coming for you. Falcons by a lot.
Lions at Cowboys, fun game again. I'm going to take the Lions, though.
No, me too. I'm going to take the Lions, especially since the Cowboys have struggled all year, especially almost losing to the Giants, which Giants I still think really should have won that game, and then getting blown out by the Saints. I think the Lions have no problem, especially coming off the bye. I don't think that's going to stop the Lions. Lions take this one.
Would love for the Lions to win, but I'm unfortunately going to have to pick them, boys. I think they are starting to put together some momentum defensively and that Jared Goff is finally going to have an off game. He cannot keep this run up, in my opinion.
The last game of the Week 6 slate, Monday Night Football, Bills-Jets. I spoiled my pick in the beginning. I'm going to go with the Bills.
Yeah, me too. The Jets right now are absolutely dismissed. As you said, the absolute dumpster fire that is the Jets, so give me the Bills.
Got to give Will credit for that one. He said it. I thought it, so he just read my mind. But ESP notwithstanding, I'm going to have to go with the Bills as well.
Well, that is going to do it for this edition of NFL Friday. Bradley, Daniel, it was a lot of fun chopping it up with you guys. Action-packed week in terms of locals here for the Giants and the Jets for NFL football. And what a season it's been so far. It's been a lot of fun. Can only expect it to get even better. Very, very exciting football and more to come. But for Riley Byrne and Daniel Melia, I'm Will Talent signing off for this week on NFL Friday, a production of WFUV Sports.